everybody. Bill Buckmaster back in the saddle again after a nice, well, actually, we came back on the air yesterday live, but as far as Tom Fairbanks is concerned, Tom's first day back with me. Hey, Tom, how are you today?
Hi, Bill, and welcome to
welcome
your
back.
Wishes.
Welcome back.
The 100-degree temperatures are finally here.
Yeah, it was so beautiful over on the coast, 50 degrees. You could really get used to that, couldn't you, in the morning? The Buckmaster Show on a Wednesday, midweek edition, May 29th, 2024. I survived 2 hours in the dental chair from 8 to 10, and the Novocaine or whatever they're using these days has now officially worn off, so I should be able to carry out my duties here without any problem. The Buckmaster Show in our 14th year on the radio. We come to you from the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. The radio station is 1030 KVOI, the voice part of the Bustos Media presence, growing presence in Tucson, five radio stations under one roof. We are KVOI, the only source on the radio for local news and talk. Worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. Our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's go now on the live line. Tucson Ward 2, Democrat City Councilman Paul Cunningham. Hey, Paul.
Bill, how are you?
Good. We haven't talked in almost 2 months. So,
due to
me being away for a lot of May, I needed to just get away and unplug for a while. And it's good to have you back on the radio. How are things going?
Wonderful. Thanks for asking. Just finished up the school year and looking forward to the summer and finishing out this fiscal year with the city and then getting back at it come fall. I know. I'll still be working, but I'm actually I turned 50 this year, and my family and I are taking a vacation to Ireland.
Wow!
And so it's we've been saving for a couple of years for this, and I'm just really looking forward to it.
Back to the homeland. When is that trip in the fall?
No, it's this July.
Oh.
When we started planning it last year, I was under the impression that I was still going to be teaching. Mm-hmm. So that was it.
I mean,
we're taking my three boys and it'll be a neat trip. And, it's a once in a lifetime thing for me.
So you will then not do any teaching, or you'll still try to do a little bit, or how's that going to work in the fall?
It just depends if I'm needed. I don't think I'm going to teach. I can say with a great certainty I'm not going to teach all day.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm only going to fill in. I'm probably going to sign up as a sub or something.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm needed, I'll fill in maybe on Fridays or something like that. More as a community service type of thing. It wouldn't be anything that would interfere. But for the most part, I thought about maybe retiring from teaching, but I may want to go back to teaching someday after my political career is over. So I'm just kind of playing it by ear. But for the most part, I'm 99% or 99.5% a full-time councilman. That's what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be available. But if I'm needed for certain things, then I can obviously help out.
All right. Well, I've got a stack of city stuff here in front of me, and what I can't get to with you today, I've got Tim Tomier coming in as our Friday Focus interview this Friday. So what the dust up about cutting pool hours, where's that right now?
I think we've got a solution to restore at least some 80 to 90% of the pool hours. There's a couple of exceptions. One of them notably is going to be in Ward 2 because that pool's under construction. We're building a splash pad at Fort Lowell Park, and we're still finishing the refitment. So I don't even know if opening the pool, halfway or something, or for a very abbreviated amount of time, is even worth it. I'd rather allow the construction piece to finish, and we'll open it up. Fort Lowell, to some degree, is a year-round pool. So it's in the extended season group. So Its hours are on a different formula than, say, some of the pools that are just open in the summer. So I think we're going to have some solutions out there to at least keep a large proportion of the pools in the summer open until all the kids go back to school. But the hours for extended season, that's going to be a little bit tougher nut to crack. But I think we have a solution. We have some funds available to ensure that this summer session will be great and will be close to or as equal to as it was last summer.
What necessitated this? Was there some issues with the Parks and Rec budget?
Well, what was weird about that is that we got an email about a week before, and they said we're going to have to cut pool hours, and some 63%, they decided to cut 50 hours a week per pool for the entire school for the entire year. And I think they were just trying to be fair, and I think they were just trying to be methodical and actually deliberate as a bureaucratic arm. What I think they should have probably done is checked with the ward offices first and assess them. You know, here's the deal. Sometimes we go off and pay PR firms or focus groups or people to run focus groups to do stuff. Well, we have a focus group. It's called the ward office, and the ward office is listening constituents' concerns all the time. And I think that was where I think the disconnect was that I just wish we would have had some talk about it and could have kind of helped them plan this, because the rollout was a little fumbled. Again, it's not the end of the world. These things happen in cities, and you just got to move forward and address and work the problem. Just work the problem. So that's what we're doing.
All right. Item two on my agenda today, the Rio Nuevo Board trying to keep the Tucson Roadrunners hockey team from moving to
the... keeping the Roads. Yeah, they're here.
Well, that's what I want to hear. What's the update now on this?
So they're going to be back. They're coming back, abbreviated schedule. I think they're doing like 36 games this year and then maybe 24 games the following year. They're going to meet all the clauses in their contract, which is more than we can ask for. What I think this does, though, is that if it goes the right way and just the way the market works and how kind of everything, you know, locks together, I think there's an opportunity to keep the Roadrunners here even longer. So I'm real excited. And Tim Tomier and Mike Ortega and our city attorney, Mike Rankin, did a great job in kind of finalizing that deal and making sure that we weren't losing our hockey team. And we got an indirect assist from the G League because they took over Mullet Arena, which is where these guys wanted to go. And it just really didn't make any sense for them to go now. So everything kind of fell into place. It's not a lot of cost to the city, and it allows us to keep our event space activated for those extra 30 nights a year, which I think is really important. It's important from a financial standpoint, but it's an important from keeping that our convention center solvent and relevant.
The owner is from, I guess, Phoenix, right? The owner of the Tucson Roadrunners, and he's talked about building an arena up there for them. Is this correct?
Well, I mean, that's what I hear, but, you know, they've gotten the trials and tribulations of building things with public funds and bonding out are pretty well documented. You look what happened with Legacy Park in Chandler a few years ago. They bonded out some $300 million, and then it got sold at auction for $30 million. And, you know, it's an incredible facility. I've actually been there, but still, I'm not sure that the taxpayers around the country are into that stuff these days. Tempe was one of the reasons this whole thing started, was that Tempe couldn't get a package pass that really was only incentives. I don't even think it was taxpayer paid bonds. I think it was just taxpayer backed bonds. And they went to the voters and lost. And that's kind of what started this whole thing 2 years ago, to keep the Coyotes, which is the parent team of the Roadrunners in Phoenix, was Tempe not being able to pass their stadium bond. So not bond, but stadium package. So I think there's a number of different pieces to this. I mean, if they're going to build an arena, that would be interesting to me. Right now, I look at the valley, which is Phoenix and the East Valley. I call that whole place the valley. And I think about how they've got Glendale Arena. They've got America West Arena. They've got the Student Activity Center. They've got Mullet Arena. And they've got the Vet. They've got five venues already built. And I can't imagine them, like, figuring – plus they have another nine baseball stadiums that are only used, you know, 35 to 45 days a year. I can't imagine how they're going to justify all that. It doesn't make any sense to me.
All right, let's take a break right here. Paul Cunningham is with us, Ward 2, Tucson City Councilman. He's on the live line with a very good landline connection, I will say. Mona's Danish Bakery is home of the Danish Kringle. Their website's monasdanishbakery.com. They are located at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. As an added enhancement, they now have alcoholic beverages available for your enjoyment. They're open for breakfast 6:30 in the morning, and they do take Monday off, and well-deserved after usually a very busy weekend. Northeast corner, Swan and Sunrise, open right now for lunch. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. We'll be right back with Paul Cunningham. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition. Paul Cunningham is with us, and we bring Paul on the program once a month, and he is the Ward 2 Tucson City Councilman. So we need to talk about what's been going on with the Tucson City budget. Formal approval, I guess, is coming up here this next week. Is that correct, Paul?
Yes.
And what should our listeners know about this money plan, this money package?
We're balanced this year. We've got a couple things to work out in the next couple weeks with the package for 25. for FY26. So we're balanced for 25, but FY26, so July, the fiscal year that ends on July 1st of 2026, that's where there's a potential deficit, and we want to mitigate that. There's about a $22 million gap projections-wise. I think there's three or four things we can do kind of really quickly right off the top that can get that number down to under $9 million, which is really manageable, and we'll have 2 years more or less to kind of be able to figure out the strategies on how we're going to do that. But at the same time, we've got some service delivery wants we want to do. I'd like to see us add some authorized firefighting positions. I'd like to see us keep the pools open at a much higher rate. So we'll have some things we'll have to add so that even though we're able to cut the $26 million gap, some things will be added. I'm going to bring some things like procurement reform in the next year that I think will allow us for some cost avoidance. And I think we can get some money. We have some antiquated fees, not all of them, but we have some antiquated fees where I think we can improve on. And I think then there's some other things we can do in collaborating with other jurisdictions that can increase some of our revenues. So where we are for 26 is my more concern. I'm actually really impressed with the package we have coming out for what basically is Mike Ortega's last budget. And since he's come to the city of Tucson, he's done an outstanding job. And as he leaves the city of Tucson, he's considered one of the best administrators in the state of Arizona. And so I think it's bittersweet, but he was able to prepare his successor and build a succession plan. And so Tim is kind of taking over with no wrinkles and no speed bumps. And so I think we're able to go full speed ahead in starting the process for the budget in 26. And I'm real confident we'll have balanced, but what we will be able to avoid is we're going to avoid layoffs, and we're going to keep our service delivery high, and we're going to avoid furloughs and some things that we had to do 10 years ago during the recession. So I think those are the things that are on my mind as this budget comes to an end. I also want to make sure we've got a little extra money this year for this year that we need to let our employees know we value them and that we want to retain them. So those are the things that we're going to do. And every year, it's been a minute since we've come up with a budget that was that had some challenges. We haven't had one over the last three or four years. We were able to secure a lot of different federal grant money and federal aid money that helped us really bring keep us afloat and keep us in the right spot and keep us competitive. And so I think a lot of jurisdictions around the country are going through these challenges, and we're probably a year ahead of everyone. We're probably some folks are facing deficits this year, including the state of Arizona. Obviously, we've heard about the University of Arizona. I know Pima County's got some budget challenges to fix up. They're not enormous. It's not a huge hurdle, but they can definitely do it. And then we're hearing about, obviously, some of the other cities around the state that are really getting they're taking a hit with the two adjustments in the state share revenue the two state share revenue provisions that the legislature passed, and it cost us about $27 million bucks, and we're able to absorb the hit this year. But if it didn't exist, we'd be balanced through projectedly balanced through 2030-2035. So it is what it is, and we're just going to absorb it and move forward.
You mentioned, and we'll have the fire chief Ryan on our program a week from Friday. He's always a great interview, very transparent guy. You said something about fire positions. It was my understanding fire department is fully staffed at this point. Yes.
Right. So we have 632 authorized members, and we always have a few extras because we always have an academy running. So we have 632. Not every single person is deployable. I think I think we've added another 13 through a SAFER grant, so now we have 645 positions, I believe. And but for a city our size with the square mileage we have, we probably want to come in right around 680, 690, depending on who you ask. I don't know if we can get there right away. And obviously there's some I's to be dotted and T's to be crossed. But, you know, I want us to be the optimal fire department. I want us to be in the 90th percentile in performance and response times in every category. And I think that's an important goal to have. So we'll see kind of how we do on that. I think there's some opportunity with collaborating with the other municipalities in the county that can help us optimize some of the service delivery we have in the region. But ultimately, when you're looking at national averages and you're looking at staffing per person and staffing per 10,000 people, we want to fall in those lines. I'm happy to report that this year, on the, you know, just not on the fire side, but also on the police side, this year, as of today, when you include our CSOs, where we have 155 out of 150 positions filled, and we have 808 out of 882 commission positions filled, and then we have another 43. We have another 43 professional investigators, which is a great program. That's folks that used to be on the job as commissioned officers come back and do some investigative work for us. All those folks give us 981 people helping work the public safety side on the police side. So I think we've made some real good headway there. We've been in the last four fiscal years, we've ended the year with less officers than we had, and this year that is not the case. And I'm really proud of Chief Kazmar and his team in getting that righted. And so I think we're in a good place with public safety, but again, that's always part of the needs. I always want to be working on parks. We always want to be working on roads. You're seeing a lot of activity in Midtown and East Midtown and the East Side a little bit, where some of those blacktop money for the residential streets is taking place. And so we're really excited about filling those gaps, and we're really starting to see the progress with our residential roads. Ultimately, the idea is that every single 5 years, with these roads being reconstructed, they'll stay solid. But every 5 years, like clockwork, they'll get resealed, and they'll look like good roads all the time as well. It's important to rebuild, but you have to maintain. And so the road maintenance piece is critical here. And as we transition from a city that's in crisis to build new road to rebuild our existing roads, now we become a city that isn't in crisis on rebuilding existing roads. It's more a city in need of being able to properly maintain performing roads. And that's been an interesting transition, because when I first got into office, it felt like 90% of every road in everywhere was failing. And so to be in a situation where now we're actually talking about maintenance and how to lay down sealant every year and how to do it methodically and with incredible organization and execution is pretty neat, because it's just a different discussion than it was 10 years ago.
I see it going on all over town. I mean, it's good. It's kind of a hassle if you're there where they're while they're doing it, but when they're through, it really looks good. Before we go, fare free transit, the bus rides, what is that? Is that covered in this next year's budget?
Well, I know we're supposed to have a discussion for 26. I know there's a lot of pieces. There's so many different moving parts to it. There is some value for being able to get on the bus and just hop on and go. There's some value for working people who are just trying to make ends meet to get where they want to go. There's some things we've got to do with the bus where, you know, kind of the biggest problem that we have when we do stuff like this and we want everybody to have an opportunity to enjoy it is that you get a few bad actors taking advantage of a good situation. And that's pretty much the mantra for any business, for any agency. And so that's kind of how do we thread that needle where we can still deliver that type of fare free transit, but it's being done safely. It's being done organizationally. It's being done where some of our bus riders who feel uncomfortable riding the bus right now don't. And so those are, it's how do you thread that needle? I don't think there's right now, no one has come to me with a good solution. And one of the things that people will say to me is, well, you know, if we don't have free buses, then if we get rid of free buses, then we won't have issues on the bus. And I know we've had these issues on the bus before and after fares. So I don't know if that's true or not. But I think that there's some discussion to be had there. For right now, we really have to look at kind of what we can do for our premium services. And for me, my biggest piece is I want to push back a little bit on the FDA restrictions that go into Farebox, because I think there's some fee-for-service stuff we can do on the Sun Van side, which is our paratransit, that can improve that service. But if we don't have any fares, the prevailing wisdom has been that if you without fares, you can't add a fee-for-service for a premium service. I don't know if that's really what that rule says. So those are some of the discussions we'll have come the fall.
All right, we're going to have to wrap it up. Paul Cunningham, good to talk with you, sir. Thank you very much.
Hey, Tucson, let's bear down and check out High Corbett Field this week. Arizona's hosting a regional in the NCAA baseball tournament. Our Cats have done a great job. A big shout-out to Coach Hale and the rest of the ball club in their successful season. And let's move on to Omaha.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Have a great day.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Can't believe all the water I am drinking. Keeping your mouth open for 2 hours in the dental chair will certainly dry you out. And rarely have I ever had dental work done before a radio program. Normally it's after the show, but hanging in there. So we're off and running midway through the midweek edition of the Buckmaster Show. Green Things and Zocalo Village have the naming rights to the Buckmaster Show studio, and we're glad they do. They're at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Seems like everybody I know goes to Green Things because I have a lot of friends who like to garden, and it's natural that they would head over to Green Things. Jan and Jack, the owners, very hands-on, do such a great job. It's greenthingsaz.com. They're open daily, and their sister business on-site with all that wonderful pottery and beautiful imported items is Zocalo Village. Their website is zocalovillage.com. When we do our live line, we're doing a couple of live line interviews today. That's presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, our public health contributor. We've got 24 or so contributors, so proud of these people. They're all experts in their field. Certainly Will Humble is an expert when it comes to public health. He's the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association. He's been in the business, the public health business, for about 40 years, His time at the Arizona Department of Health Services included various roles, and the top role, he was the agency director from 2009 to 2015. Will, how are you, sir?
I'm doing just fine, and you sound real good for 2 hours of dental work.
Yeah, I asked them to do the kind of the low numbing stuff where it doesn't knock your tongue out, because that seems like that would have been a real
that's a problem in your business.
Yeah, so but it worked out well. Preparation for a crown, and it's always a problem when you break a tooth, which happened to me on my vacation. So finally got in to have that taken care of, and anyway. Okay, a lot to talk about in our public health stack of stuff. Why don't we begin with, since I was talking about you as the former agency director at Arizona Department of Health, we've had this issue with these department heads, these potential department heads that the governor would like to see installed in those particular agencies. And now there's this legal action. I understand you spent a little time in court as an observer this week.
Yeah, so that was last Monday. I went in, and I was surprised. I went a little bit early for the oral arguments. It's called Peterson v. Hobbs is the name of the case, and I thought, well, there's going to be a bunch of journalists and others interested in this case. And I walk in, I'm the only person. Well, there's one other person who I in the gallery, so I had plenty of open seats. I just wanted to listen to the oral arguments because, having lived so many years inside a state government, I've seen how important it is to have good leadership in these agency director roles. I mean, the amount of authority that these agency directors have is really enormous. The state legislature has, over the decades, delegated so much decision-making and authority to these agency directors. It's important to have talented people in place. And as you mentioned, we've talked about on this show before, the Senate and especially a committee, a brand new committee that was set up in the Senate this last year, has really been thwarting Governor Hobbs's choices to lead these agencies. And so Judge Blaney, who heard the arguments, he hasn't made a ruling yet, but when it comes out, it's sure to be of interest, and we'll talk about it once he makes a decision.
It looks like we could have, what, 9 ballot propositions that were directly sent over to the voters from the legislature. Is that what you're hearing?
Well, there's 6 for sure that have been sent over that'll be on the ballot that the legislature placed on as a proposition. 133, 134, 135 is a series like that. And then there's 2 voter initiatives that are likely to be on the ballot, one around abortion access and another that would change the primary system so that there's open and more fair primaries elections. And they're still gathering their signatures. I'm told they're at around the 400,000 level. You need to have more than the 350,000 threshold because some of the signatures go outside the box and stuff like that. So there's eight likely, and then nine if this Border Security Act is referred to the ballot, and that's going to be heard in the House next Wednesday, I think.
So your organization, the Arizona Public Health Association, is taking a stand on five of these propositions?
Right. Both voter initiatives, the Abortion Care Initiative and then the Open Elections, and then we're opposing three of the referrals that the legislature sent over, one of which would limit public health emergencies to just 30 days. Right now, they've already passed a law that limit it to 120 days. I think 30 is not nearly enough to get your ducks in a row if you've actually got an emergency underway. And for your listeners, I've got a blog post up with each of our positions, and your listeners are probably going to differ with me on some of those. But anyone can put an argument into the voter publicity pamphlet for just $75. You can write up a 300-word argument for or against some of these propositions, and you can find the way to do that. You go to my blog, and it'll walk you through how you can do that. And you can let your friends and family know what you feel and why you think it.
And again, where do our listeners find out about your positions with the Arizona Public Health Association?
Right. You just you can Google AZPHA, Arizona Public Health Association, and at the top of the feed it's called Will's Blog. That's me. And I think about 3 or 4 days ago, I put up the blog post with the link to the Secretary of State. Now, there is a deadline. If you want to turn in an argument for or against some of these things, the deadline is June 20th. So you still have a couple of weeks to think about what you want to do. You submit your argument online, so there's no walking down into an office or anything like that, and you pay with a credit card, you're $75.
I've always wondered about that I guess anybody then can submit if you pay the money, and I wonder how they came up with that fee, I guess, to cover mailing costs or something.
Right. Yeah, these booklets go out to, I think, a couple of million households. Every household with a registered voter in it gets one of these pamphlets. You can elect to get the electronic copy if you want. I like the hard copy so I can take it with me places that I don't want to look at a screen. But there's a production cost. And this whole thing came about with a voter initiative that the voters approved, 15 years ago, the Clean Elections won. This is part of that.
All right. This might be a natural place to take the break. And then when we come back, all this dust up and this media coverage about bird flu, I want to talk a little bit with you about that. Should we be worried here in Arizona? Anyway, Will Humble, stick around. We've got another segment with you coming up. It's Buckmaster on a midweek edition. Close out the show with Will Humble after we take a break.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation improvements in the region, averaging more than $100 million in tax revenue each year. The RTA is preparing a new 20-year plan for public review prior to a May 2025 election. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This time of year, we like to talk about Silver City being cooler than Tucson. Pretty much holds up. Tom brought up on my screen the weather over in Silver City in Grant County. Let's see, about 86 today. So actually, it can usually run, it can be about 15 degrees cooler on some days over in Silver City. They have a mile high, approximately 5,000 to 6,000 foot elevation. That accounts for why things are cooler. And also the incentive for you and all of our listeners here in Tucson, if they want to, we want to cool off, it's a good place to head east. Only about 3 hours from the Tucson area, pretty much I-10 to Lawrenceburg, take the exit there and then head up the mountain to Silver City. More on Silver City. Hope you'll check out their website, southwestnewmexico.org. So proud of all of our sponsors who have been with me in some cases almost since day one, more than 13 years since we launched the radio show after 22 years on PBS on Channel 6. Will Humble has been with us a while too, and we're delighted he has. He is our contributor on public health. So much media coverage, Will, about the bird flu, which I guess the official designation of this is H5N1. Is that correct?
Version of the influenza virus that came on the scene about 2020. And it infects birds for the most part, and it's super lethal in birds. I mean, if this H5N1 influenza virus gets into a flock of chickens or turkeys or something like that, basically it kills the entire flock and quickly.
Wow.
So it's really lethal for birds. And it has infected mammals. I mean, they've found it in things as bizarre as polar bears and minks. So it has infected some mammals, but just recently they found that this avian, we call it avian H5N1, has been infecting cattle. So there's about 59 cattle, I don't know if you call them ranches or facilities, that have identified cattle that have been infected with this H5N1 virus. Now, it's not lethal in the cattle. They eat less, they produce less milk. And they, you know, they move around a little bit less, but then they recover. The issue has been, and public health wise, is that the dairy cows that have been infected with the virus are put off a lot of this virus in their milk. And fortunately, you know, the milk that makes it to the, by and large, almost all the milk that you find on the shelf has been pasteurized. So even if the virus was in the milk, it's pasteurized with heat, and so it's no one's been infected. No humans have been infected with that milk. Now, raw milk is another matter. We can get into that if you want to. But so bottom line is, at this point, it doesn't look like a huge public health threat. It's still a mild virus in the mammals that have been infected, and as I mentioned, cattle and some of these other wild animals. The fear, not fear, that's not the right word. The concern, I think, is that if the virus were to mutate further, say for start infecting pigs, as an example, who are more similar to humans than cattle are, you could get a brand new H5N1 virus that could be potentially lethal for humans. I don't think that's going to happen, but that's one of the reasons why it's important to pay attention to this virus as it continues to mutate, and it will continue to change and mutate with time, as we've seen with COVID. Have we, you know, we talked about that on the show a while.
Would you be cautious about drinking raw milk?
Raw milk, yeah, but yeah. Just, raw, you know, shelf milk, milk and yeah. Pasture, yeah. No, I am not, just because of this. Just you know,
yeah.
That's not something I'm interested in doing. It's like wearing a seatbelt, you know? You can. Why not wear your seatbelt? Yeah, you're probably going to not crash, but why drink raw milk when you got good milk you can count on?
Yeah. Want to talk about doulas. I guess you could call them as kind of essentially a non-clinical birth coach. And Arizona is kind of moving in the direction of reimbursement for doula services.
Yeah, this is a project I've been working on for about the last, honestly, since I probably 10 years. I've been trying to get, now we finally got a law in place that allows for the certification of doulas. And you're right, they're birthing coaches. The reason I'm so excited about this reimbursement at Access, that's our state Medicaid agency, is that these birth coaches are proven to be effective at improving birth outcomes and reducing costs of delivery. Now, how do they do that? Well, the doulas are an independent person that can work with the pregnant woman and her family, your partner, whoever wants to be involved, to talk through the birthing process, to explain what's going to happen and how it's going to happen, and then be in the delivery room when it's actually happening. So that you have an independent person who's there as a coach, not as a clinical, you know, they're not mm-hmm. the OBGYN delivering, but they're there to help think things through. And the reason that births who are attended by doulas are cheaper is because they prevent a lot of C-sections. Mm. There's a lot of unnecessary C-sections that go on, not just in Arizona. This is a problem around the whole country. And when you have a doula who's in the delivery room, that's somebody who is a cool-headed, independent person who can give, who has the trust of the mom and hopefully the partner too, to help think through whether they really want to do a C-section. And I have two kids. I know what it's like to be in that delivery room. And as the dad, I'm just like, what? I'm kind of a public health guy. I'm like, mm-hmm. I don't know. You know, you're freaking out. It's not something that, you know, I wasn't that great a decision maker. You just kind of say yes to whatever. Yeah. But when you've got a doula in the room, there's someone who can help think through whether you want to continue with the contractions and continue to try to deliver vaginally. So, and there's fewer episiotomies. That's a procedure that sometimes happens during birth. So I'm really glad to see that Access is moving towards reimbursement, which would then allow, you know, women who are delivering, who are Medicaid members on Access, they could have their doula with them through the process, and Access, by reimbursing them, is going to pay less for these deliveries.
Yeah.
Because they
yeah.
have fewer C-sections and they cost less that way. So I'm a real enthusiast for it. You know what I'm like, Bill, anything that has good evidence to it, especially when it saves money and improves health outcomes, that's a win-win, and that's what doulas do.
Yeah, and I know a little bit about doulas because there are now end-of-life doulas as well, Will Humble.
Oh, so that's a new – I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah,
but,
there are.
I don't talk too much about it. I don't know, but
– end-of-life doulas kind of help navigate during the hospice process, and I can speak personally. One I know of that was very helpful – as far as our Great. Family was concerned. So that's how I know about that's how I know about doulas. So if someone wants to on the as far as the doula birthing doulas, they can comment through June 10th, right?
Correct. And I actually have a blog post on that too. You can go to azpha.org and read about doulas, and I link to the evidence base, the published literature that shows that they improve health outcomes and reduce costs. You can read about that, and you can read about how you can let Access know what you think about reimbursing for those services. And I've got a link, or it's not a link, it's an email address that you can send your information to Access, and hopefully, I don't think it's in any danger. I think they're going to do it. But it's always good when you see something good to put in your comments and say, well done. I hope you really follow through.
One item, let's see, I've got one item we have not covered, examining Arizona's essential health benefit package.
Yeah, so this is something that Governor Hobbs announced, I think, last week. And the headline on all the articles in the newspaper and media were all about how the announcement was that state employees would be able to get certain kinds of contraception for free. But the sleeper in the story is that she also ordered the Department of Insurance to examine the health benefits that Arizona has called the essential health benefits and look at what those essential health benefits are with respect to reproductive health. So the reason the essential health benefits are important is the Affordable Care Act, what some people call Obamacare, said that when states have health insurance, whether it's private health insurance or marketplace health insurance, you need to have certain essential health services that you offer. And that sets a baseline of care among all the insurance plans. And so what Governor Hobbs has done is said, hey, let's take a look at what the various plans offer, what the benchmark plan offers in Arizona with respect to reproductive health, and then with the idea of making some alterations to that essential health benefit package to make sure that it's comprehensive with respect to reproductive health, and mostly contraception, I think.
How about dental care? I speak because I just came from the dentist. It seems like Arizonans are really underinsured. Just a general statement, very underinsured when it comes to dental care.
That goes way back to 1968.
Wow.
The reason for that when Medicare and Medicaid came on the scene way back then, there was an opportunity to get oral health and dental care built into Medicare.
Yeah.
And Medicaid, well, it is a little bit in Medicaid for kids, but the dental industry didn't want to be part of it. They wanted to keep themselves as separate. So that's why we've got this bifurcated system where you have
wow.
a dental insurance and then you have health insurance.
Wow.
So, what you're getting to here is that the Biden administration recently announced this last week that states can look at their essential health benefit package that I was just talking about, and they will have the option to start including oral health and dental care in the essential health benefit package. Now, that's not something that the governor can do by fiat. That would be something that the legislature would need to weigh in on, and because it would affect lots of health insurance, including Medicaid.
Boy, it is so expensive, dental care. Anyway, Will, always a pleasure, sir. Thank you. We'll look forward to your next visit with us in June. Thanks, Will.
Okay, take care.
All right, Will Humble, the former Arizona Health Director and our contributor on the Buckmaster Show on public health, and he is with the Arizona Public Health Association. He's not only with them, he is the executive director. All right. Buckmaster saying, hope everybody has a great afternoon. Tom Fairbanks wishes everyone well as well. See you tomorrow.